see how he goes.
Yeah. Have you done a podcast before?
No.
Do you listen to podcasts?
No.
Rarely.
Yeah, rarely. Good answer. Welcome to Cloud Realities, a conversation show exploring the practical and exciting alternate realities that can be unleashed through cloud-driven transformation. I'm Dave Chapman.
I'm Shau Kazal.
And you will hear that we have not got Rob Kernahan with us, unfortunately, this week. Rob is off on some day job mission elsewhere, undercover, no doubt. I'm delighted to say joining us today, or rather rejoining us today, is Roisin McCarthy, founder at Women in Data, and I'm delighted to say friend of the show. And with Roisin today is Elisa Tsai, VP of Analytics and AI at Capgemini Invent. And Elisa has been very heavily involved, I think, in Women in Data over the course of the last couple of years. So nice to welcome you both to the show. Roisin, how are you doing? It's been a little while.
Really well. I'm a little bit tired, Dave. It's been a hard week.
Yes, you've had a lot going on. Do you want to just tell everybody a little bit about what's going on this week in your world?
Yeah, we hosted our 9th flagship event at the O2.
Amazing stuff. And hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about that as we go into the conversation. And Elisa, welcome to the show. First time, but maybe not last time. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Do you want to just tell everybody a little bit about what you do and how you're involved in Women in Data?
Sure. So I'm a vice president in Capgemini Invent. I look after a lot of the work we do for data analytics in healthcare and transport and some public sector. And been working with Roisin on Women in Data for about 3 years here now since I joined Cap. And still going strong.
Cool. Well, let's remind ourselves then of Women in Data. So, Roisin, why don't you give us a bit of the background and maybe connect it to the last show that we did with you guys and give us a bit of an update.
Thanks, Dave. It's awesome to be back.
It is great to see you. Really good to see you.
Thank you for asking. Clearly, I didn't mess it up too much last time round.
Well, you know, it's like actually one of our biggest downloaded episodes by a margin. So we're delighted to have you back. If for nothing, just for the numbers.
Well, I do love numbers.
Yeah, don't we all?
We do love numbers. Yeah. But without repeating history and the story too deeply, I founded Women in Data in 2014. The reason being was an underrepresentation of women in the field. I started the community with 125 members. We're now 60,000, which has grown since the last time that we last connected, I'm proud to say.
What's been the growth over the last year, sir?
15,000.
Wow, good stuff.
Significant.
It's like 25-30%.
Yeah, and we're going to see that spike over the next few weeks because we're coming off the back of the flagship.
Right.
But the journey to date has been just extraordinary. What we've seen is a remarkable step change in female occupation of role, particularly in senior levels in data and technology. And our community is really around equipping and enabling the careers of women in this space. As you know, Dave, we've just hosted the world's largest data event for women. We had 3,000 women in data at the O2 yesterday for a day of celebration and elevation of female leaders.
That's incredible. What did you hope to get out of the event?
Well, that's a really tricky question because I just want these things to go well, yeah, Dave. Right. But ultimately, what we'll look for is, and it's the strap line of every flagship that we have, connect, engage, belong. We look for women to get together and feel connected, engage with each other and take something away, but feel that sense of belonging. Mm. And that's really around creating safe spaces for women in data.
Very good. Very good. And the growth that you're seeing is very dramatic and fantastic to see. What's driving it, do you think? So obviously, hopefully you get a bump off the event this week, but what specifically do you think is driving the energy around it?
There's definitely has been a change in and around the introduction and the vogue topic of Gen AI, right?
Yeah.
And what has happened is people have recognized, industry has recognized that data is paramount. Mm. to Gen AI success.
Foundational. Foundational.
Absolutely. And that you have to build representative capability in the AI products and services that you're deploying. So industry recognizes that it needs to build teams that are not only representative of society, but have a great representation in gender as well, to build the best products and services for their customers.
Yeah. And fascinating. I think we touched on it in our last conversation, the notion of diversity in data becomes, I mean, it's always been important, but it becomes critical, I think, when you think about AI and AI making decisions that frankly don't carry over the sins of the past.
Absolutely. The sad thing, though, David, it was a topic that we touched on last time, we're still not seeing that increase in young women studying the subjects that take them into a career naturally in this space.
Right.
So it's now more the senior people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. People are seeing it as career destination, but they're already into a career path by that point.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah. We're going to come on to this again in a second, but I think the link to AI is so critical in this space with the agenda that you're dealing with. Do you see that seeping its way into the pipeline build, so the educational pipeline build yet? Or do you think there's still a bit of a lag there? Because you would think that, you know, kids going through school are going to be looking at their futures and thinking it's going to be dominated by AI. So what role do I have in that? You would think actually that could really help the pipeline, wouldn't you?
You would. It's a really good question, Dave. I heard last week about a private school in the UK appointing an AI gen head teacher. So I think that there are elements of it penetrating into the school, into school environments and curriculum, but nowhere near the pace that we're seeing in industry. So there's a massive disconnect, right? That is just not on an even playing field. So we're not going to future skill the industry or industry generally, economy, with the skills that we need from the education system as it stands.
Yeah, I worry about that.
The challenge as well is that people are not necessarily clear on how they get into AI, right? It's such a black box. So do I become a mathematician? Is a statistician? Is a computer scientist? What is it that will allow me to get into that space? And sometimes it's none of this. You can go in from so many different routes.
Well,
and
quite.
Sometimes problem solving and some creativity has important.
You know, there'll be whole new roles as the industry builds up around it, won't there? They're like prompt engineering, and there's probably specialists in the curation of AI and the nurturing of AI. We had this fantastic company on the show called Juji about a year or so ago, and they build generative AI chatbots. They're based in the Valley, and they refer to it as nurturing them. So like nurturing AIs like children, because actually it's not dissimilar when you think about how you've got to bring in diverse thinking, that the data set has to be built over time. You are effectively building a consciousness in a way. So it is going to require wholly different styles of thinking and different teams and things like that to, you know, run the world in the way it's going to be in, like, say, 15 years time.
I can see AI nannies running around the place now.
Could easily happen.
I love one of those.
They'll be like little robots, I assume. And then and this week at the MWC conference, we saw, you know, a robot dog doing backflips.
Yeah, I hope that is going to be the AI nanny in the form of a cyber dog. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. If that's the peak of human achievement so far, is a robot dog doing a backflip.
World peace, hunger.
Yeah. Yeah, but we've got that problem cracked. No matter what happens, we've cracked the dog doing a backflip problem.
Yeah.
Right, let's move back to the women in data. Sorry, and what I think is very exciting at the moment is a new series of things you've got going on. I think called 20 in Data. So you just want to give us a bit of an insight into that and how it came to life.
Oh, definitely. So I mentioned 2014 is when the idea of women in data featured in my brain. It was 2016 that I got in touch with a long-standing contact of mine for my day job. So I've been headhunting in data and technology now for 25 years. But in 2016, I got in touch with a woman who I had recruited for when I was a rookie by the name of Edwina Dunn. Now, anybody who knows their onions when it comes to data entrepreneurship will know the name Dunnhumby. Edwina Dunn was the founder of Dunnhumby, right, and the creator of the Tesco Club Card. She, a phenomenal woman, an incredible entrepreneur, somebody who has just absolutely got the title of Godmother of Data, right?
Right.
She's got it nailed. And Edwina and I got in touch because she'd seen some of the work that I have been doing around women in data. And she said to me, Roisin, there's something really, really missing in the data field. And that is relative role models, women that you can see that you want to be. There's just not enough. Can you do something about it? Mm. Will you join me in creating a role model series? Now, Edwina Dunn is also not only a truly, incredible expert in her field, she's also a philanthropist. She created the Female Lead, which is a charitable organization all about role modeling and inspiring women. She helped us curate what is now known as the 20 in Data and Technology series. We are in our sixth series of the campaign, and it was really founded to create relative and accessible role modeling for the data industry, specifically for females. Mm-hmm. And we now have 120 women in our alumni, I'm very proud to say. And it is a phenomenal series. It looks to cover rising stars. It looks to showcase women who are at the forefront of innovation in data and technology. It looks at leadership. It looks at non-for-profit. It looks at every aspect of data practice and discipline that you can imagine, from architecture to ethics. This is a ubiquitous showcase of brilliant role models in the space of data and technology. The other thing that it is deeply representative. It's showcasing an intersection of women that exist in our industry that don't always get the light shined on them.
I mean, fantastic. How does it structure manifest itself then? Is it through mentorship? Is it through courses and, online or in classroom courses? How does it come together?
So every year we take nominations from industry, either self-nominations, or you can nominate somebody who inspires you. Mm-hmm. And this year, our judges had 450 nominations to have to work through.
Wow.
To select 20 amazing role models.
Very good.
So the overall concept is that this is industry selected. It isn't who's got the biggest job title or the biggest data lake. Mm-hmm. It is really about who is out
there.
Who's
got the biggest data lake is definitely not necessarily a criteria to judge, success on, I would suggest.
But you would be surprised at the power lists that exist out in data and technology. That's a criteria, right?
Yeah.
Well, how big is your data lake?
How big is your data lake?
I never heard it, but...
How many have you got? How many data lakes have you got?
Exactly. So this is really about uncovering and unveiling and promoting and platforming brilliant women that don't get that spotlight and should do, because it inspires other women to do other brilliant things. And we've seen success in this sixth series.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad to say that joining us today, as you heard at the top of the show, is Elisa. So Elisa, why don't you give us a sense of how you came into contact with it to start with and some of your experiences so far?
Oh gosh, we're going back a few years now. Mm. So I've knew Women in Data in my previous organization. I attended one of their flagship events that was before COVID, and I was impressed. And it was the first time for me that I was in a place where there are lots of women and lots of women working in data. That never happened. Normally I was the only woman in the room and not even notice it. It was just normal. So actually the flip side of being in a place where they're all women and all talking about data was so strange, but right, wonderful. Right. I then moved jobs, and in my new organization, I wanted to know whether we have a partnership with Women in Data. We had a partnership, and the answer was no, but we talked about it. So I remember getting in touch with Roisin and said, what can we have? Can we have a conversation? Because, I'm new into the job. I want to build a big community. We've got some incredible women that want to get more involved, but I don't have a platform really to get them exposed to a bigger network, giving them opportunity. So we set up a call, and I told this story a couple of times now. I was sitting in my car outside my daughter nursery because she was settling and she wasn't settling in. So it wasn't my best moment. I was trying to think about what was going on in the nursery while we were talking to Roisin.
Yeah.
And basically Roisin's message was pretty much like, I've been talking about this for months and months now, nothing happened. So, you know, although she was probably pleased to talk to me, but she was also like, just come back to me when you've got something that is tangible. And I was more like, don't waste my time. That's how I interpreted.
That's what I heard, Beryl. So like,
yeah, that's how I interpreted as well. So I was like, fine.
These organizations don't run themselves, do they?
So I took a bit as a challenge, really. So I went away, I've like gathered momentum and we got, you know, we started the partnership with Women in Debt, which have been absolutely amazing. And that's how I got more and more involved. We've expanded the team working with Roisin and her team. I've done a number of events now involved, lots of people from the industry, clients. And also it was an opportunity for me to do what I enjoy, which is inspiring the team and also focusing on things like healthcare and gender in the context of healthcare, which is it's a passion of mine, and that gave me an opportunity to do that.
And how is it coming together from, say, a performance perspective? Because obviously this is a brilliant community in terms of empowerment, but have you also seen as a result of this that you have managed to grow more diverse teams, more diverse voices, more diverse leadership, and therefore it's visible in performance and results?
Well, in terms of community, it had a massive impact. My first small team of women focusing on diversity, we were about six, and we had, you know, two or three initiatives that we could run at the same time. And I always say this, now I go to their meetings and there are about, you know, 25 of them just in the core team drive initiatives. I don't even know everything that's going on. And sometimes I see posts on LinkedIn on things they have done. And that's it. That's for me success. The fact that I don't have to be involved in everything. And sometimes I just turn up and I celebrate with them on what they have achieved. And we have achieved a very good balance in terms of diversity in a team in an area where it's very difficult. There's more to do, right? And especially as you go like a senior level, that is still very much a challenge. We still see a big gap, but it's getting better. And I also feel the organization itself has really appreciated the value. You know, at the beginning, we had to push a lot to get things done. And now it's like people coming to us and say, can we get involved? And actually, the industry wants to get involved. Our client wants to get involved because they see the value of it.
Right. And do you see, I was going to ask you actually about the relationship between the community that you're putting together and leading and what's going on in other organizations. Are you part of connecting a lot of that stuff up and creating sort of wider ecosystems?
Well, Roisin and the team have a fantastic network, and that's all the point. Is for me, is who can we bring together that has got the same objective, the same ambition to empower women and give them a voice. And, you know, there are areas where I'm more comfortable working with because it's the industry I operate, but really it almost doesn't matter. I met some brilliant women in this journey in an area that I don't know anything about. And that's great. It's just part of the learning.
And if somebody inside Capgemini is listening and is interested in getting involved, how would they do that?
Just come to me. I think we've got so many different ways to get involved. And I think it is from organizing more events for the team and in terms of development, empower them. We've organized brilliant event with the clients. And again, having sector-specific, industry-specific event topics that we want to explore or we think is good for Capgemini to explore, but also for our client. So we do that in many different ways. There are endless opportunities, but yeah, me and Roisin can help with that.
Definitely. And I think just to add to that and build on it, Elisa, some of the really cool stuff that we've done have been things like hackathons, bringing all female teams together to hack on female-driven societal problems, whether it be health, whether it be safety.
Right.
The other aspect that we've done some really cool stuff with is around partner exchanges. So, you know, bringing that like-minded organization and thinking together that naturally would never be in the same room for any purpose ever. And non-competitive, of course, but, you know, bringing like-minded, brilliant women together who have the same challenges but would never walk on the same paths in terms of industry. So, yeah, those sort of opportunities we're fostering and managing those relationships to really build for better futures for both industries and partners.
And also things totally unexplored, like, you know, if you remember the first event we did on health, and actually it was just an idea to talk about the gender data gap in health and how can we address it, and the paper that came out of it. I think I still have people contact me and just say what happened with that, are we doing more? And of course I point in the direction of the new chapter that Women in Data set up or health on the back of this, but also other activity that we have been doing internally. So sometimes it's just about an idea of a passion that there's so many ways you can take that.
So going back to 20 in Data, Rashid, just give us a bit more specifics. How has it evolved over the course of the years you've been running it?
The six series. Let me give you a whistle-stop tour of the history. We started off with Edwina supporting us with the first series, which was Who Is She Outside of Data? And really looked to create portraits of women outside of the workplace to show that they're so much more than their job. The second series was around femininity. We were constantly getting women coming to us saying, you know, I'm being asked to be more alpha or be part of the boys club. Oh, we wanted to show femininity in this portrait collection. Yeah. The third was the red series. It's iconic. It was one of my favorites for sure. Clearly red is my favorite color. The fourth series was during lockdown and we couldn't get out and photograph. So what we had to do is send a robot to the houses of the winners and collect portraits of them. And we called that series.
Could that robot do a backflip though?
That's my question. It definitely did. It fell over a lot.
Yeah.
It fell over a lot. But that was called Home Is Where She Makes It Happen because everyone was working from home and this role modeling was happening at home. We had the black and white edit, which was series number 5. And now this beautiful, beautiful sixth series, which is now my favorite by far. The concept is, we've called it True Colors.
Right.
So every one of our awardees are showcased with a color that represents them. Not only that, we've used an AI model, some AI gen, to generate a AI flower for each of our portraits and each of our awardees. It's color themed. The model uses prompts from the awardee to describe how they saw this fictional flower that describes their own personality. So it's a really unique concept. And of course, Elisa, you have been one of the brilliant 20 this year. How was the experience for you?
Well, the experience, I think, started even before for me the announcement. I've been applied, and I know I've been put forward, but I've also been applied for this previously and never got it. So that's
the nature of it. Congratulations on this year.
Thanks. This year, I normally don't enjoy doing this type of submission or putting myself forward. It's not something that comes natural to me. But this year, I have to say, I really enjoyed the process of applying. I really spent time thinking about what does it mean for me and how has been my influence in terms of the type of role model I want to be and the type of person I want to be in this field. So that, in a sense, my experience started with the application and I really, really enjoy that older process, which I normally don't. And then I forgot about it because this is what happens, right? And we get so busy and then things pass. So when I got the phone call from Roshan, like it was, you know, it was incredibly exciting. And then followed by more sort of networking sort of event. We of course had the photo shoot. It was just something I'd never done, so it was totally out of my comfort zone.
But also, were you happy with the photos?
It's amazing. Yeah. It's nothing like I was expected. So that's the other. But I do, at the beginning, I didn't recognize myself in it. I just thought, that's not really me. I don't know how they got to that. But then kind of looking at it more, I think I can see myself in there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, there's the celebration of the event. I'm just looking for what comes next, really, in terms of...
Well, it comes with responsibility. With reward comes responsibility. I can't remember the saying.
With great power comes responsibility.
There you go.
Spider-Man lives by that.
I don't know about the power, but definitely I'm looking for it. What's going to happen now on in terms of how can I get more involved and really be that role model and one of the wits, how they call it, right? So be truly one of them and yeah, being a champion of what this network is trying to do. I don't know what she's going to get me to do. So well,
we're going to find out right now, Lisa, I'm hoping, because I was going to say, what does good look like in your eyes, Roisin? What is the responsibility that comes with it?
So everybody has their own strengths. Mm. And also there is a huge amount of commitment to date, even from these women who have been showcased. With 120 women in the alumni, there's no doubt our messaging gets a lot further and wider each and every year that we expand this alumni. The roles and responsibilities vary. Time commitment is obviously very important. And lots of these women are at different stages of their lives with different caring responsibilities, etc. But it can be as simple as being a spokesperson for Women in Data. It can be, you know, writing white papers for us. It could be taking the stage. In 2023, we had 500 public speaking engagements, of which our 20 really helped us populate. So the breadth of responsibility is of being this ambassador is it's what you make it and how you can and amplify your own voice and vision for it. But we can write you a job spec of a million responsibilities, Elisa. We'll talk about that later.
Isn't it?
You're going global, Roisin, right? I don't know if you mentioned that. So that's another interesting.
It really is, and with expansion now in India, in North America, I think the last time that we met, we talked about the stretch in growth, and it has been global growth more than anywhere else than UK and homegrown. It's a really exciting chapter now. Really exciting.
So look, maybe to bring our conversation to a bit of a close for today, let's talk about what we need to do to get into action around this. So Lisa, perhaps around your community in Capgemini, you know, what would you ask people to do?
So we've done so much already, and I'm very proud of what we achieve and what we've done with Women in Data, but we can do much more. We can have more people involved in the community, in all the events we are running. We can expand the type of activities that we do for ourselves, for our client. So more leadership involved as well, that would be fantastic. And allies are incredibly important. We can't just do that on our own. So I'm here. If people want to get in touch, happy to talk.
Well, definitely get in touch. And Roisin, what can you leave us with as a call to action for today?
Well, we showcased that 6 series yesterday, but the next series nominations is open. Dave, you can start to nominate who inspires you today. We will be selecting the 7th series in 24. So get nominating who inspires you or consider self-nomination. It's really important that we're reflective and think about our strengths and what we can offer as role models to industry. So yeah, that's my call to action. Dave, get nominating.
Shauk, what have you been looking at this week?
So each week I do some research on related ideas in transformation and tech, and this week I thought we should take a look at International Women's Day. So International Women's Day is a global holiday celebrated annually on March 8th as a focal point in the women's rights movement. And it gives focus to issues such as gender equality, reproductive rights, and violence and abuse against women. And this year's theme is called Inspire Inclusion. And I looked at the website at internationalwomensday.com and they described it in a beautiful way. When we inspire others to understand and value women's inclusion, we forge a better world. And when women themselves are inspired to be included, there's a sense of belonging, relevance, and empowerment. So a question to all of you. Do you have any tips for organizations on how to empower women?
Roisin, that sounded familiar. You must have a view on that.
I think it is familiar.
Yeah, yeah.
They're my lyrics.
That's right on point, isn't it?
I wonder where they got that from. There's some copyright there, I reckon.
Right. Maybe you should write to them, something like that.
I might do.
Maybe they used AI to generate it. Yeah. You never know.
You know they did. Now you say that. That's why it's familiar to me. It's ChatGPT.
But I think a brilliant question. I wonder what your reflections are on Shalk's question there.
So creating, inclusion is a really interesting topic. And I've met some phenomenal researchers and specialists and professors on the topic. It starts with belonging. You can't include individuals. They have to feel that they belong first. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I learned deeply within the work that we've done in Women in Data. Just to come back to another point that you mentioned there, and it's around safety. So this year has been the theme of our Data for Good initiatives has been women's safety. And that comes in many forms: psychological safety in the workplace, safety in getting to the workplace, safety in so many elements of the work that we do. You have to create safe spaces in which people can belong.
I couldn't agree more. Like your point there, that you can't kind of force somebody's inclusion. It becomes even worse, that kind of thing, I think, when even in a well-intended way, people try and put like metrics on things like that, as if you could sort of mathematically drive inclusion. Inclusion to me comes with a series of multiple different things like psychological safety, diversity in the team, and, you know, all types of diversity in my mind, like neurodiversity as well as gender diversity, as well as even extrovert versus introvert situations, just trying to create spaces for people where they feel like that they can speak openly, that they can speak quietly or in a loud voice, in ways that there isn't like a template of how to do it right.
There isn't. And I think that if you start with safety first and build your environment as a safe one, the rest will follow.
And the ability to recognize yourself in the group as well. I think we had historically, you know, not many women in the data space, for example. That means that you can't see someone else like you and you can't think about what that could take you. And that sees more women in those particular places and more women into the leadership. And I totally agree with you. It's not just about metrics. Metrics are just a reflection. It's just like, it's a way to track, but it's not the way to change behavior and to change the reality.
Yeah, very well said. That's very well said. I entirely agree. It doesn't change anything, does it? You're literally just reporting on something without actually going through the behavioral change and the sort of psychological change that's required.
We always need data though, right?
Oh, of course. This is the right group for that.
I was going to say, might be out of business without that.
And Roisin, the connection to International Women's Day and the conference that's happening, did that all come together in sequence like that? Is that like an intentional sequence? Was it a bit of serendipity that it's happened like that? What does International Women's Day mean to you and your organization?
2 points on that. Every day is International Women's Day in my world, firstly.
Fair point.
And here's a fun fact for you, Dave. What's the most searched term on the 8th of March on Google?
Is it International Women's Day, Roisin?
No, Dave.
What is it?
When is Men's Day?
I was expecting that.
You would be.
I wasn't. Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good God. Honestly, what can you say about that? I'm speechless.
So I think that just to the point though, it's wonderful to have that. And actually, if we look at its historic value, it was huge for those women, for that women's rights movement, particularly around the turn of the century and pre-war. Where we are today is that I think it's actually devalued, Dave, in my honest opinion. I think it's truly devalued. It's why we don't host our event on the day. Right. We do it before, right. We do it afterwards, we do it around it, we won't host it on it. The other aspect is that what we're seeing is that women are suddenly platformed on the 8th of March because it's the thing to do on the internal requirements of diversity register and inclusion register. So we'll tick that box and something happened on the 8th of March. Brilliant. We can move on. We've done our thing for women.
Yeah, I think that's right. It almost becomes unhelpfully totemic rather than has the systemic effect that you're trying to describe.
And, you know, for me, I celebrate it to really recognize those brilliant women that have changed our world as we know it. We have to do that now every single day. That is our role.
Well, a fabulous message to end on. And as always, it has been both an education and a delight to speak to you, Roisin. So thanks a lot for making time. And it's such a busy week.
Thanks for having me back.
And Elisa, it was great to meet you.
Good to see everyone.
And many congratulations on 20 in Data.
Thank you.
Fabulous. Well, look, we end every episode of our podcast by asking our guests what they're excited about doing next. And that could be something in your personal life, like I've got a great restaurant book tonight, or it could be something in your professional life. So Elisa, why don't you kick us off? What are you excited about doing next?
I want to keep on this theme, right? I just want to see what the rest of the year is going to look like. And as I said, what Roisin is going to get me to do next.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, I think it sounds like there's some sort of job description thing coming in the post to me.
She's already signed her life away.
I'm sensing some metrics are coming, you know. Roisin, what are you excited about doing next?
It's my daughter's third birthday today.
Tremendous.
She's three.
Oh, how lovely.
And I'm going to be celebrating with a birthday party. I'm not Mother of the Year. I haven't baked a cake. I feel utter guilt around it. I'm going to pop down to M&S in a bit. And go and grab a caterpillar.
We got all of our kids are now 12 and 14. We've got all of our cakes from M&S. They're pretty reliable, I would say.
That's it.
Yeah.
And pick myself up a bottle of fizz.
Yes.
So I'm going to celebrate that achievement that I've kept her alive for 3 years.
Wonderful. Well, have an absolutely awesome time.
A huge thanks to our guests this week, Roisin and Elisa. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks also to our sound and editing wizards, Ben and Louis, our producer, Marcel, and of course, to all of our listeners. We're on LinkedIn and X, Dave Chapman, Rob Kernahan, and Sjoukje Zaal. Feel free to follow or connect with us, and please get in touch if you have any comments or ideas for the show. And of course, if you haven't already done that, rate and subscribe to our podcast. See you in another reality next week.